Welcome to the World of Foundational Horror Podcast, episode 118. I'm Mom, aka Christina, and this is the podcast where I take a tour of classic international horror. On the main pod, Mac and I choose a genre or subgenre of horror and pair an international film with an American one. With these minis, I want to fill in the gaps of my own knowledge and find those foundational films that have influenced and inspired modern horror. The only rules for this project are that the movie has to have been made before the year 2000, and it must not have been made in the U.S. Today, joining me to help me discuss the 1981 classic thriller-horror hybrid Road Games is filmmaker, podcaster, Canadian, and esteemed WoHo, Stefan McDonald. Welcome, Stefan.
Thank you kindly. What a warm welcome. I appreciate it. I'm excited to talk about this Ozploitation classic. Also, I love that we consider it a classic because I don't think anybody else does, really.
I'm calling it. It's a classic in my book.
All right. I'm gonna pull up the IMDb because I am woefully inept with names. So ignore my clickety-clackies for a hot second.
So I, later on, spoiler, I brought back an old feature. Mm-hmm. And because I saw this described as a truck-sploitation.
Yes.
And so I made a list of some of my faves which ones you have seen.
Yeah, I almost wanted to start right off the top because I'm such a huge fan of, like, road thrillers or, just, like, kind of, like, travel horror. Because, like, being on the road is it just feels like you're in this, like, nether realm when you're traversing like these like more rural roads, right? And I find that so incredibly affecting. So I'm like super happy to also contribute my favorite road horror movies or truckexploitation, I guess.
Yeah, let's go with truckexploitation. I love it. Okay, well my list is pretty short. If you're on IMDb, you could look up truckexploitation because I think there's a list.
Amazing.
The list I have is The Wages of Fear from 1953.
Yeah.
Okay. Duel, 1971.
Mr. Steven Spielberg, yes.
Smokey and the Bandit, 1977.
I've never seen Smokey and the Bandit. Am I better for it or am I worse for it? I'm going to leave that up to you.
I saw it as a kid, and I really don't remember it too much, to be honest.
Do you feel like any kind of like nostalgia towards it? Because I think that'll inform your... Yeah, so I feel like I can live my life, and I'm good. I've not seen it.
How about Sorcerer from 1977?
I love Sorcerer. They're playing obviously, William Friedkin died recently, so they're doing some 35mm prints of... Sorcerer, The French Connection, The Exorcist, and To Live and Die in LA at the theater that is like literally just kind of like around the corner from me. So definitely going to see The Exorcist. I'd love to see Sorcerer because the Tangerine Dream score for that, in addition to the movie being amazing on its own, but the score is like so wonderful.
Yes.
And I get excited to talk about the scores for movies, and that's definitely one that stands out.
All right, just two more. Maximum Overdrive from 1986.
I recently just saw that in the theater, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's not a good movie at all.
No, it's not good. Did you have fun, though?
Yeah. It's a weird movie because it starts out, I'd say the first like hour is a great time, and then it becomes very tiresome after the hour mark, and I'm just like, all right, wrap this up.
Well, one that was not on the list, and I don't know if it qualifies, is The Hitcher.
Yeah, that's not a truck horror, but it's a road horror. Until the end, yeah, actually. And obviously Joyride would be on the list too.
Yeah, Joyride is on my list, yeah.
I'm a huge proponent of Joyride. Love Steve Zahn, the late Paul Walker. Yeah, I don't know. That movie has like a bit of nostalgia, but I'll rewatch it like every few years over the summer. It's a summer movie for me. I'm a huge fan. The Hitcher's also great, by the way.
Yeah, I really like The Hitcher, even though my queen is, spoiler, is dismantled? No.
Quartered. Or not quartered. They're halved.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's unfortunate for her.
Yeah. So it's not a great movie, but it's like fun and serviceable and competently made and enjoyable. So
let's get into this gem. The short plot summary from IMDb says, a laid-back American truck driver in South Australia starts to suspect a man driving a green van of killing young women along his route and proceeds to play a cat-and-mouse game in order to catch him red-handed. That's pretty accurate, I guess.
Pretty succinct.
Directed by Richard Franklin, screenplay by Everett DeRoche, story by DeRoche and Franklin, starring Stacey Keach, Jamie Lee Curtis, and Marion Edward. Guessing that's the killer. Cinematography by Vincent Monton, edited by Edward McQueen Mason, music by Brian May. Not that Brian May. Release dates, the 26th of June 1981 in Australia and the 19th of November 1981 in the U.S. It has a running time of 101 minutes.
Marion Edward is actually the, air quotes here, nagging wife.
Is that how she's credited?
That's how she's typically described, which I think is unfair.
Me too. Frugal Frida.
Yeah. Poor Frida. I really enjoy her character. And I kind of like where it goes. Yeah.
I like that section.
Yeah. It's a good section of like her slightly befriending Stacey Keach's like quid character. But then also slowly coming to the realization that, hey, maybe this is also the killer and kind of like flipping the dynamics of the situation. I'm a fan. Yeah.
So briefly, Stefan, what is this movie all about?
So we have Stacey Keach, as I said, who plays Quid, who I can't remember the character's first name. I'm looking right now. Pat Quid. But he goes by Quid. So that's the most important factoid here. He is a long-haul truck driver and has foregone his mandated layover to take a high-paying job of carting some ham hocks. What are large sections of pig called? Because I feel so dumb with like that kind of stuff. Butchery. I don't know if it's a word, but I'm going to go with it. It's a bunch of pig carcasses, some quartered pig carcasses that he's carting around. It starts the movie with him going to a hotel and like, he has a dog, who I think was originally called Bosco, but
Boswell.
Is it Boswell the name of the dog?
Yeah.
He calls it a dingo, but it's obviously not a dingo. It's like a cattle dog. Anyways, that's how he describes his dog for the majority of the film. Because quote unquote the dog doesn't or the dingo doesn't bark, therefore it's not a dog. Just also not true of dingoes. So it's like doubly wrong. But anyways, he's going to a hotel and there's like no vacancies because the hitchhiker that he had previously considered picking up has gone with the driver of a green van, and they're the last people to get a room in this hotel. So he's forced to stay outside of it. Then the next morning, a garbage bag is thrown outside that his dog takes great interest in. And you see like somebody like lurking out the window, which is very, very creepy. But unbeknownst to Quid, what we as the audience have seen is that we have the hitchhiker, and it's like, I think this is a great opening sequence. She's, naked on the bed back to us, tuning a guitar. And as she's tuning the guitar up, the person who drives the green van is like coming with a guitar string and like going to strangle her. And it's like a very tense scene because, you know, she's tuning up the guitar string and he slowly lowers it. And I think what they were trying to go for was, she's confused, then horrified, but she just looks confused as she sees the cord coming down. So I don't think she plays it fully successfully, but it's still otherwise like a wonderful scene. So we do know that the person who drives the green van is in fact a killer, but Quid only has his kind of like odd observance of things to go by. And then they hit the road once picking up their hams, his hams, his large hams.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, I guess, how the movie starts. Is that?
Yeah, anything? That's great.
Yeah.
One thing I was thinking of with the girl and or woman in the hotel, it kind of reminds me of the character in Fargo, the wife when she's being abducted, because somebody just comes up to the glass door with a mask on, and she has never seen anything like that in real life before, and she's just like, "What is happening?" And she's she doesn't run away like she should. She's just kind of frozen, kind of fascinated. That's kind of the reaction I thought of the victim there.
Yeah, it's a very interesting choice. And there's a lot to like about this movie. I think that like the script is very, very tight. And it you know, for somebody who is like trying to aggressively ape Alfred Hitchcock, I mean, he even calls Jamie Lee Curtis's character Hitch. Obviously, it's a short form of Hitchhiker. But and then he would go on to do Psycho 2, which, by the way, underrated franchise. I aggressively support all of the Psycho sequels. I think they're good stuff.
I think I might have only seen the second one. I saw it in the theater and I liked it. I think I might have actually take it back. Do you know what year that came out?
Psycho 2? Man, I'm terrible with that kind of stuff. And the one that Anthony Perkins directed is also very good. It's kind of campy. Well, I think that's the third one.
This team of DeRoche and Franklin worked on
Patrick
and The Long Weekend. And I have not seen those.
The Long Weekend is an animal attacks movie, I believe. Which, yes. Good stuff. Patrick is also, I think, a ton of fun.
Okay. Awesome. I will definitely check those out. Yeah, I love this movie. Stacey Keach is really entertaining, very charming. He's a lonely guy, but he tries to amuse himself as he's on these long hauls. And he meets Jamie Lee Curtis, who is quite a bit younger. She was 23 when she made the movie. I think this was the next one after Halloween, maybe?
Apparently the director, Richard Franklin, had gone to USC and known John Carpenter, so he kind of like, I think he had also met Jamie Lee Curtis on the set of The Fog when he had visited, so he kind of just asked for like the, hey, you know, give me the in for the contact for her, and they went from there. I mean, her father is a like Tony Curtis is a producer on this film as well. I think like he got a little deal. He went by his actual name, which is I think like Bernard Schwartz is Tony Curtis's real name.
Oh, wow, gosh. That's quite a bit off from Tony Curtis.
Yes, very much so.
Huh. That's interesting. They have fantastic chemistry, I think.
They're great, for sure. So Quid is kind of just like a... I wouldn't call him like a Lothario, but there's like a certain like... He's always like playing a game with people he's talking to. And... Like, it's very much like a fun sparring match verbally between him and whoever he's talking to. And Jamie Lee Curtis has kind of like a no-nonsense personality to a certain extent. So it's kind of fun watching, you know, him be like overly verbose and her just being like kind of annoyed by him. Like there's like a clear like opposites attract dynamic to the way that they talk. So yeah, and completely agree.
It's a little bit uncomfortable because there is quite a large age gap. But
yes,
so I'm not sure if at the end they're supposed to be romantically linked. I think you're probably supposed to read it like that, but
yeah.
I just prefer to think they're going to be very nice friends.
It's true. I do think that, and this is like, I think I've been so desensitized like age gaps in like films. I didn't even care because like it's usually like, oh, here's, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio with like somebody who's like, you know, a 19-year-old, par for his course, you know what I mean? So I feel like I just like I don't even care anymore, which is probably a problem. And you know, it's not like a great way to like, you know, you're supposed to be critical of movies when you watch them, and to just like feel completely blind because it's just the normal way things go. It's kind of like sad, I suppose.
I mean, this is a very long tradition of, you know, the male lead being 20 years older than the female lead. So that's pretty much the case here. I kind of don't care just because it's fun to see them together.
Yeah.
But it's a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But, and he comments on it, you know.
Yeah.
She's like, how old are you? And he says, too old. And then she says, I don't think so.
oh, man.
So the killer actually figures out that Quid is in pursuit of him.
Yes.
And then things get interesting.
I agree. So basically after they leave the motel, the person proceeds to like tailgate him. And it's like a three-way tailgating. Well, sorry, there are two cars tailgating, one slow vehicle. So we off air, we had talked about the person towing a boat, who is a very cautious driver and driving very, very slow in like the fast lane. And we have Stacy Keach's Quid in his tractor trailer, tailgating, trying to like get them to like go over so he can continue on his way. Then we have the green van also tailgating him as well. So I think even from the first moments, the driver of the green van feels like he has aroused suspicion and is looking to, like, maybe there's like a plan to either ensnare him in what's going on or alternatively just kill him. So there's definitely like an immediate interest in our main villain, who is lit wonderfully in this movie. It reminds me of like Black Christmas almost, like where you just see like an eye or something.
Yeah.
Like it's very, go ahead.
No, I love that too. Cause there's a shot where I guess Quid sees him in the side mirror.
Right.
It's just his eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really nice.
Yeah, I like that as well. Even like the, not to like jump ahead, but like the final confrontation where like they choose to light him in a way that like he's walking towards the truck, but they don't light him with like the headlights. They like light him differently than, you know, the front flood of lights would otherwise dictate. And I think it's a smart choice. Unrealistic, who cares? But like, I think it makes complete sense for this movie. So, yeah, definitely an immediate cat and mouse pretty much between Quid and the killer.
And I really love that section where, so at one point, Quid notices that the back door of his truck is open and he goes inside the back where all the pig carcasses are hanging.
Yeah.
And he's counting them and he realizes there are two more than he thought there were.
Oh, they just miscounted. They should have marked it 32. It's so good.
The voiceover is fantastic because he's arguing with himself in the voiceover.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I've ever seen it like that. I really just like the way that they did that.
I think it's a smart choice as well. It doesn't feel like hokey in any way. Like the sound, the way it's put over the footage works quite well.
Yeah.
And then I also like to piggyback off that sequence, like when he stops at the weigh station and they're like, you're over by like, you know, 35 kilos or whatever. And, he, as he's like being like, oh, they're like, oh, they just made a mistake. We'll let you go. And he's like, hey, wait a second. And then there's like a bunch of like, so there's a bunch of wire around your axle or whatever. That could be the additional weight. Just to say like, well, maybe the meat isn't entirely the issue. It could just be this wire. Who knows? We just like continue the is it human meat or is this pig meat?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of a funny like motif throughout the whole thing. And of course, there's quite a payoff at the end.
Yeah.
but that weigh station sequence is very suspenseful. But I guess Quid is just so darn charming that the guy at the weigh station is just like, Oh, I get it. You probably have a hot TV in your van. That's fine. You know, yeah. I'll let you go ahead. So that's fortunate for him. And then the killer gets him in this chase. I had to watch this sequence twice, actually, because there's this chase in this little town. And so there's the green van, there's Quid's rig, and then the cops are chasing Quid.
Yes.
And then the green van gets Quid stuck in this alley.
Oh, it's so claustrophobic.
Yes.
And that bothers me.
The police car actually ends up underneath the truck. And oh my gosh, it's such a fantastic
story. We're spoiling everything, so yeah. Good luck watching it as if you haven't seen it before. But the Jamie Lee Curtis isn't a quote unquote heiress. Is that correct? Is that how they describe her? So yeah. She's from an affluent family, and she, before she eventually gets ensnared by the green van driver, she does call her father, and she's like, "Oh, I'm with the truck driver. No, he's a nice guy, you know." So when she does go missing, the police are looking for the truck driver versus the green van driver, which I think is adds a lot to it. Like, he's listening to the radio at one point, and then he realizes there's like a PSA to look out for him in her disappearance. And it's just like adds to the frenetic nature of like the, I think that's the third act, right? That's like that's like when it breaks out into the final moments of the movie. And I also like the sequence where that leads to her being taken by like the green van driver. Like they have a plan. They're going to find the guy, and you know, they're going to catch him. And the green van is thought to be derelict next to a rest stop. So they go to the rest stop. Quid goes into the rest stop and sees some feet beneath the stall and assumes that this is the green van driver. But it's not. It's a previous character, this sneezy biker. Everybody has like an odd affect in this movie. There's like the vehicle with like a bunch of balls in it. Where we have Stacey Keach's Quid saying, "This man's got balls." Like, it's like it has such like uncle dad humor. Is Quid, but of a specific generation, like not modern dad. 70s, 80s dad is Quid's energy. So if anybody's curious and has zero interest in watching this movie for whatever reason, that's the energy that he has, I think. he reminds me of my uncle on my Quebec uncle, like my French uncle. That is my uncle, is Quid. It's like such a specific type of person.
Yeah, there's probably somebody like this in every culture. But I totally know what you mean. I mean, 70s dad kind of hits it on the head for me. Yeah. He's a sweetie, but he's also kind of a perv.
Yeah, it's a little pervy for sure.
Yeah. But, you know, it's okay.
It's okay.
It's okay. He's harmless.
Yeah, I think back to like moments where I was like, my uncle has since passed away, but like when I was younger, like him, like it was always playful because his wife would be across the table, but he'd flirt with like the waitress or whatever. Yeah. If we're at a restaurant, and like I think back, I'm like, that is like by today's standards, like not okay. It wasn't okay then, though. Not to say it was it's fine, but I was too young to understand that, you know, this is somebody who's just trying to like work a server job, just wants to like get through the day and not like, you know, have this weird French guy try to like put the moves on her. Anyways,
but in this case, Jamie Lee Curtis does find it very charming. She's amused by him, and she says that she wants a little bit of adventure, and I think that she sees that in him. And he is mostly very sweet.
Yes, I agree.
Slight pervy twinge to him, but it's,
you know. Yeah, he's like a guy who's like constantly flirting, like no matter like what, he's just like always on and always going. And like, with that said, he is, like, very, very nice. Like, it doesn't feel like there's, like, any impropriety. Thank you. I don't know why I couldn't get there, but I couldn't.
That's okay.
There isn't any impropriety to the way that he's, like, according himself, I guess.
Yeah.
I have a question for you. So, obviously, I know that you teach philosophy.
It's true.
We've never discussed. What fields do you specialize in, I suppose? That's a dumb thing to say, but, like, in university, I took, like, philosophy of the mind, but I was interested in, like, mostly ethics. I'm curious.
I teach at a community college, and I teach the intro to philosophy class and the intro to ethics class.
Cool.
And my mission is to introduce as many people who are not white guys into the mix. So that's my mission. And,
amazing.
Yeah. So I guess I'm just trying to have more voices heard by my students than you would normally get, like, in an intro class.
It's an admirable thing. I mean, it's also kind of like what you do with the podcast in general. It's like you're trying to, like, introduce voices that might otherwise be neglected or like underserved, I suppose. I guess those are the same things. I've just described the same thing twice.
That's okay. I do that all day.
Underrepresented and underserved. I'm not very smart, by the way.
No, you are. No, it's but I love the philosophy of personal identity. I think that's like fascinating, and use a lot of film in my teaching. Of course, you can probably guess that already. Yeah, so I don't really have a specialty. My thesis was actually on it was a subject in political philosophy, so I kind of bounced around a lot when I was in grad school. But
I only asked because they mentioned Smith and Jones in this film.
Oh, God.
That's only the reason I brought it up. And I was like, oh, I wonder if, like, you were like, ha, I got you.
No, I totally missed it.
Because I think he's, like, literally considering, like, do I pursue this fan and, like, allow this person to potentially die? In his mind, like, is he spiraling out of control? Is this a real thing that's happening? If I don't, will I commit? This person will die, essentially. Or do I pursue them and try to save them? And I think that's, like, a comment that he flops down at one point. And I was like, oh, this is adorable.
There are, like, some subtle messages, not so subtle, but I mean, when he's at the Yellowdyne, or I can't remember the name of that little town. And he's trying to.
Is it report. When he's on the payphone?
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's this, okay, filmmaker stuff, and help me. Is it a pan?
Yeah, it's like a 360. Yeah, it's a great shot, and for the time, it's like amazing that it looks good and it's, like, smooth. Like, nowadays, it's much easier, but at the time, that's like you're putting your, like, stamp. Like, oh, I'm good, and I know I'm good.
Actually, the first shot of the movie, too, is a pan, right? We go from the garbage cans up to the motel window, and then when the rig comes into view, the camera moves back the other way, following the rig. So it's just kind of like, look at this. No, wait. You know, and it's very efficient. Yeah.
Panning's lateral, tilting is, like, vertical, and then pedestaling is, like, going, like, just straight up, like, booming up, essentially. Okay. There's, like, a bunch of other movements as well, but
we should have little clinics, because I'm sure I always misidentify shots, but anyway.
No, it's all right. Well, it's funny because there's, like, I work as an editor, but I used to do, like, commercial, I was a cameraman for, like, commercials, and it's funny because, like, no matter what the camera move is, everybody describes it as a pan, and there's a meme where it's, like, it's showing all the camera moves that you could potentially do, and everyone is being described as, like, panning. And it's okay, like, oh, well, man.
Help me, and I'm sure I did it wrong when we did Tenebrae. But what's going on there, where the camera is basically going all the way over the house, and you know, it's just,
I don't think there is a name for what that is, because it's booming like the camera like on a jib all over the place, but it's like I haven't watched that movie in like a while, but I know what you're talking about, but I don't know how, like, if it continues to follow or track people, because in which case, like, it goes from like a jib, you know, you're booming over the house, and then it might be transferred to like an operator, and then continuing onwards, essentially, or like transferred to like a steady cam. There's been like a lot of like interesting like shots recently. There's like a pretty like amazing shot in The Expanse that a lot of people talk about, but it's like it goes from a drone to ground level, then to like an operator. Mm-hmm. You can look at, I think if they talk about it on like, if you just Google it, I'm pretty sure it'll come up, and it's like the discussion point of a lot of like YouTube channels as to like, how do they achieve this? Are they stitching like a VFX shot to like an actual like, you know, camera move now? Like, how are they achieving this? But it's, they literally just, they have somebody waiting and the camera being brought down on like a drone onto the operator, secured, and then he goes away with it. But it's like such an amazing traveling shot. So there's a whole bunch of like insane stuff that people do to marry different ways that you can use the camera altogether, you know, from drone to operator to, you know, who knows what else. Yeah,
I watched the kind of behind the scenes of The Northman, and there's that one, 2:30 shot. Is it a shot? What is it? where the camera is just following Skarsgård.
Yeah, you know, it's probably a Steadicam shot. Yeah.
Oh, it's so awesome.
Yeah.
It's just so cool. Anyway, yeah. So in the end. After Quid is almost nearly, you know, arrested for the murders, Jamie Lee Curtis is discovered. She's been in the van the whole time. And thank God she wasn't killed. And she
would have been very sad.
Oh my gosh. And there's that weird comment that he makes where he's like, you know, it's just like kind of funny that like when I was in the back of that truck, I thought one of those like hunks of meat was you. and then they just cut to this woman on her knees like cleaning this truck.
Yeah.
And then I guess something is dripping on her, and then a head falls.
Oh, like, it's a guitar string like rubs against her, and she pulls on it, and a head pops out of the top compartment or whatever.
It's like zing. The end.
And then the chipper music starts up again. I don't know why I'm doing the final countdown as the score for the
Movie. There is kind of like this incessant drum. The whole thing. It's almost like a marching drum sound.
Yeah, it's like a snare kind of deal.
Ugh, I don't know about that choice.
I don't like it. It's not. I'm not excited to listen to it. But I'm like, it kind of makes sense for the tone of the movie. Like it's not too self-serious. Like even the name Road Games, it's like implying some kind of like. So some road sparring or something like it kind of fits. And I think it's like a good juxtaposition against like, you know, like the severed head at the end or like the opening of the film. I think it helps it for being like a little bit too morose. Like I think there's a version of this that's like played entirely straight. And I think it's probably kind of boring.
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. I was reading Letterboxd reviews and someone was quite upset by the score, but I also feel like it's really of its time and maybe late 70s, more so, but in any case, I know that, part of the trivia, I don't know if I have it here, but part of the trivia is the guy I think his last name's McLean, who directed
Wolf Creek. Yeah.
Was heavily influenced by this movie. And you can see that in the Yellowdyne 360 shot. It's when the kids go into the bar in the beginning of the film. So,
man, I haven't seen Wolf Creek since theaters.
He repeats that in, I think it's Rogue or whatever his like alligator movie is. He does the same thing.
Rogue is really good, by the way. I really like Rogue. I'm a huge fan.
I can't remember. I watched a bunch of alligator movies.
There's one called Dark Waters. Which,
that one I love. And I heard you say it was okay, Stefan. You said it was okay.
It is okay. I'm a Rogue fan. Rogue is more my speed. You have beef now. I got it.
There's a fantastic rolling shot when the crocodile has the woman in its clutches.
I feel like it's the open water person who did Dark Waters. They take footage and comp it into their scene. So it's like real footage over like stuff they've shot, and they're marrying them together.
And you don't like that.
Or maybe it's not open water, it's The Reef. The director of The Reef did Dark Waters.
Open water is not good. I don't like it at all.
I remember seeing it when I was like in theaters and thinking it was like fine. But I'm so partial to like, I'll watch an animal, any animal attacks movie, I'm pretty much on board. I don't even care. I mentioned on our podcast, but the one thing that I don't like in animal attacks movies is that it's always like, oh, the humans have to best this like out of control animal. And I'm like, I just want to see the animal win half the time. Like, that's like the Cocaine Bear. I was so excited to not see a bear die at the end of that movie. Not to go into spoiler territory.
Spoilers. Well, that long weekend, I did read the synopsis of that, and spoilers, the animals win.
Yeah. So the guy who did The Reef did Blackwater first.
Okay.
And the story behind Blackwater is like horrific because it's like based on something that really happened. There were like some kids who were like ATVing during like, I think like a heavy rain season. So, they were just like washing off, and one of them got attacked by like a saltwater crocodile, and they like escaped to like the reeds of the tree, and it just never went away. It just like watched them. I'm like, that is horrifying.
Yeah.
Anyways, that's more animal attack stuff, which is irrelevant for, I guess. We should do an animal attacks movie for an episode.
I'm totally down with that. Let's do it next time.
Yes.
So apparently the only trivia I could find really, aside from the production notes, was that Stacy Keach learned to drive that 16-gear semi-truck in just 2 days. And he drove it about 1,600 miles during the production.
What a true hero. I have a question. What do you remember Stacy Keach from? Because he's in like so much stuff, it's unreal.
For me, it's Mike Hammer.
Okay. For me, like, here's a recent thing. Like, did you watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine at all?
A little bit, yeah.
He plays like the author that like chronicled like 70s era cops in New York, Jimmy Brogan.
Nice.
And that's who I remember him as, I think, most. And he's also in, I saw like the Class of 1999 when I was like a kid. But I don't really remember it that well.
What a career.
I've rewatched that.
I read that he's been married 4 times. He's in his 80s. He converted to Catholicism for his latest marriage. And he's married, and he just became a Polish citizen because he married a Polish woman.
Mm.
This was shot on location on the Nullarbor plane and in Melbourne. Franklin wanted to cast Sean Connery in the lead, but was unable to afford his salary, and the role went to Stacy Keach instead.
I know that casting Jamie Lee Curtis was a big no-no.
A big no-no?
Yeah,
because... They had trouble with visas and stuff.
But also, like, I think that, like, the crew were rude to her, or other, like, castmates were rude, because you should be hiring, like, Australian locals, I think, based on, like, the funding attached to the film. But the benefit was that casting an American who was, like, a well-known person ended up increasing the budget of the film. So, I mean, positives, I guess? I don't know.
How do you feel about it as a filmmaker?
I don't care. In Canada, it's, I think, well, I mean, obviously a huge amount of time has elapsed between this and now, but in Canada, I think in order to be like qualified for a lot of the funding, it's only like X percentage of you know, talent that have to be Canadian. So you can bring in like American actors and it's fine. Hmm. So I don't mind it particularly.
This movie bombed.
That sucks, man.
Yeah.
Go to the theater to see, or don't, I don't know, or rent it, or you can't rent it this time, I guess, either. I don't know what I'm saying. Go to the theater at this time.
It's free. Yeah, go back in time.
Yeah.
And then go on opening weekend. Yeah, it bombed both in Australia and in the U.S. Apparently, Franklin said it was marketed as a slasher film, and the poster, I mean, to be fair, does
it's a great poster.
I love that poster.
Yeah, poster is amazing. It definitely has slasher vibes, but there's spoiler, there's only one person who gets killed in the entire movie, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, there's implied, more than implied, sorry, it's like explicitly stated that there's, you know, multiple murders, but we only see one as the audience. I guess there's a severed head at the end, but like we're not seeing that. That's the aftermath.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to Letterboxd reviews. Stefan, could you read the positive reviews?
All right, we have Matt Stroll, 4.5 stars. This is posted on July 24th, 2020. It's just that when you pay $100 for a dingo, you expect to get a dingo. A callback to us discussing earlier that Quid's dog is in fact not a dingo. It looks more like a cattle dog. Anyways, what a fantastic script. Peak Stacey Keach, which I had a hard time saying. this is sort of like Duel meets Rear Window meets After Hours. 100% agree. That's a great description. We have Bill Bria, 5 stars. That's a lot. But anyways, for me, it's a 4, and you gave it a 3.5, I believe, right?
Yeah. I wish I could.
I think it's fair.
3.75 maybe, but Letterboxd doesn't let me do that.
It's true. I wish there was like a quarter star option, because there are certain times where I'm like, 3.5 seems low. Like I watched Theater Camp recently and I was like, it's not, I feel like I'm being rude to it by giving it 3.5, because it's technically like the acting is like fantastic and there's like certain elements of it that it's better than a 3.5, but it's not a 4-star movie for me, mm-hmm. for me specifically. Yeah. But anyways, we have Bill Bria who says, who gave the 5-star review, cheeky little Aussie Hitchcock thriller that Richard Franklin pulls off with aplomb. I agree. All those things are correct, but not 5-star for me. We have Ian, also a 5-star review. Ozploitation classic, full of Hitchcockian nods, giallo elements, and good foreshadowing. What is it with Australian filmmakers and meat? Okay. I also, there's definitely giallo elements in this, like specifically the opening. So I think that's a good call. I think that's a fair descriptor.
Okay. I didn't think it was fair. Then I watched it again. We do have gloves. So there's the killer wears gloves in the beginning. And then there's one shot. I don't know if Stacey Keach is walking into the back of his truck, but it is this red light underneath him that he's sort of bathed in.
Yeah.
But what else would you
say? I mean, more of just the, I think that the killer is like always pretty obscured. Mm-hmm. And a giallo is essentially just a thriller. So it does meet that prerequisite. It's just not like a, I guess like a, there aren't multiple murders by a gloved killer, but I don't know. I think it still works. There are elements. I think what saves it is the fact that they say giallo elements versus, like, you know, it's a giallo. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it skates by, and I agree. Next week, Callie Zucker with the 5-star review and leaving nothing on the table, saying just this: Stacey Keach hot. not is hot, just no. Hot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Respect. We have Archie Oxenbold. That was a 5-star. Here's another 5-star. We have Archie Oxenbold. Utter perfection, start to finish. Builds tension in masterfully paced escalations of story that feel natural, bewildering, and completely disturbing simultaneously. I also agree. It's this movie has, like, a weird playful tone, which, like, again, I think that's why the score doesn't bother me as much as it would otherwise, because it is, like, a pretty playful movie at times. Here we go. This is a good callback to the start of the episode. Aaron, another 5-star review. Truxploitation horror is everything. Watch this banger to start you off. A feature within a feature. I'm reading your next your
I
next section.
Put it in brackets or something.
No, it's okay. I'm an idiot. I'm like Ron Burgundy in, like, Anchorman, where you just, like, put cards in front of me and I'll start reading them. Like,
well, I don't know how you're going to feel about this, Stefan, but not everybody loves this movie.
I'm okay with that. Like, I do a podcast with my buddy Mitch, and the whole premise is, like, I'm picking movies that I think he's going to dislike. Then I like to celebrate the differences that we all have with movies. I only rarely have aggressive positions where I'm like, objectively, I think this movie is trash, and I don't understand people who have a contrary viewpoint, but those are few and far between.
But I like it when you do that because it makes me feel less insane. Like, what was that movie, Malignant, that everybody loved?
I hate Malignant so much. It's a dumb movie. Yeah, I don't get it. Yeah. Hard pass. Well,
Polly Cashews gave it 1-star. Great vibe. Love Stacey Keach as a pretentious truck driver, but nothing happens. Seriously, I cannot stress enough how few events take place in this film.
So much stuff happens.
I know. I don't get it.
How could you put more stuff into this movie?
Travis Jomufa Poplin. Travis Jomufa Poplin gave it 1-star. I have zero fucking clue what happened, and it was kind of unbearable to watch. Jamie Lee Curtis probably ate, though. Thumbs up emoji, truck emoji, desert emoji.
So I have a question. 8 as a descriptor for a person, is that, like, a hot thing?
That's a good thing.
I've never heard it before.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a drag queen thing. Whenever I ask Mac, like, to define something, he just uses the same phrase over again.
Yeah.
He's like she really ate. Like, she ate it up. I'm like, okay, I still don't know, but okay, I'll take your word for it.
I've never heard it before. And I've never felt, like, older in my entire life, right at, like, this moment where I'm just like, I don't know what the hell this is. Anyways.
World Peace F gave it 1-star. Are there any good Jamie Lee Curtis movies based on this one? I would say no.
Man, I hate people who are, like, trying out their comedy acts on Letterboxd. Yeah. Oh, man.
I really love Letterboxd reviews. I feel like there's so much going on, and it's like a performance art.
Yeah. You know,
a platform.
Yes.
Staz and Cena gave it 1-star. I don't think I've ever seen a movie starring Stacey Keach before. Well, thanks for weighing in.
Yeah.
And then this one is Lucen Fa gave it 1-star. This movie gets 1-star. The dog in this movie gets 5 stars. The music is crazy. It sets a whole different tone for the film. The poster for this movie is more interesting than the film itself. I'm writing this review Why, still finishing the film. Just trying to save my time. Kind of taking an interesting turn now, but because it lacked any substance at the beginning, it seems really out of place. I hear that this was influenced by Hitchcock, but apart from his cameo, care of magazine cover, I don't see it.
I don't hate that review. He told a story.
It
went places. Yeah.
I know.
It was funny.
I was really looking for a conversation. That's my very favorite genre of Letterboxd reviews, but not this time. And no one said it was ass, but I think that's a more recent, you know.
Yeah.
Review.
And next time I find a one-star movie for that I watch, I'll definitely, it'll be, this movie was ass, and that's all I'm going to play.
I love it. It's my favorite. Well, Stefan, thanks so much for talking to me about this movie. And is there anything that we missed that you would like to highlight from this film?
Oh, man. I don't think so. I didn't prepare any notes, so I just like talked about everything.
I
have like an ADHD brain, so I'm like, it's hard for me to like focus. I see all the pieces of this movie that I want to talk about, and then I can't focus on all of them, and I just lose track of stuff. So I don't think so.
That's my whole life. Yeah, I've been diagnosed later in life, and it's not
same
great.
Here. Yeah. Because like, I think when I was growing up, people who were like diagnosed with ADHD were people who were like hyperactive only. And I'm mostly like a very quiet person. Like I'm very introverted. I don't talk, which is weird because like we're talking a lot on this podcast, but otherwise, like if like, I don't know people, I don't talk period. Or it's like one word answers, or, you know, as quickly as I can exit a conversation, I will exit it. So growing up, like nobody thought that, you know, I had like ADD, but you know, like even like reading for me was like a very challenging thing growing up. I mean, I read a lot now and I'm good at it, but, it was largely just like a focus issue where I'm just like, I was a kid and my brain was just like, you know, go take a left turn. And, you know, I just wasn't able to commit the mental attention to read for a little while. I don't want to sound like I'm illiterate, but I do read a lot. I promise.
No, you've recommended books to me. I believe that you.
I do actually read. I promise. but challenging for me.
No, me too. And I don't actually like to read. I prefer to get my books through my ears, but sometimes it takes longer, so I just kind of switch back and forth if I can.
Yeah, but, I find audiobooks harder for me because like if I'm focused on reading, I'm like performing an act versus like passively listening to something. My brain will just like, well, like go elsewhere, and you know, then I realize a half an hour has passed and I haven't paid attention. I'm like, oh, back to square one.
Chapter five. Yeah. I've done that too. Yeah, for sure. But I like to, you know, go on walks and listen to books that way. And I do listen to them going to sleep, which isn't, you know, great because I do miss a lot. But anyway, that's all to say that we're ADD buddies, and
that's
a beautiful thing.
It's true. I'm so scatterbrained. My greatest fear is that people like think that, oh, this guy's like, and like, I was worried people perceived me to be like just an idiot because I'm such a rambler. Mm-hmm. So we're just getting into like my fears and my fears of like perception or how I'm perceived, I suppose. So,
and how do you feel about that?
I don't feel great. This is just like, it's turning into just like a therapy session. Yeah, let's have a therapy session.
No, I think it's interesting. So my brother has ADD. My older son has like off the charts ADD.
Yeah.
And then Mac has discovered that he has it, and then was diagnosed as well. So, and I don't know. I think I you know, if you have it, you understand that sort of like hitting a wall. And I just, you know, with work and stuff, I'm just like, yeah, this is it for me today. Like, I can't focus anymore.
Yeah.
That's the end.
No, I hit walls too, for sure. Yeah. My work walls are like, I'm a morning person. Like, I'll get up as early as possible. And I'd say, I'm most productive in the morning. And I'd say when I hit like 4 p.m., I'm just like, who cares what I'm doing? It's garbage.
Yep.
Like, I'll keep working because I have to, and I have to like meet a deadline. But all the decisions I'm making are simply just to make decisions and like get them done. And I don't care. Yeah.
So I can totally relate to that. And I never knew what that was. And now I do. But
yeah.
I take medication, but still, you know, some days I'm just like, yeah, it's just not happening today.
Yeah. Agreed.
Well, hoes, thanks for tuning into this mini. I am really having fun with this series, and I hope you are too. Please get in touch and let me know how you feel about the series, and if you have any suggestions for these minis or the main show, or if you would like to have a discussion about a film that means the world of horror to you. Trademark. Remember, we love you, and don't go into the basement.